Hour number three, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Titans, and to help us do that, as we do every Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, and welcome in our friend Paul Kuharski from PaulKuharski.com and Outkick 360 as well, which you can check out every day on 94.9 The Fan from 2 to 5 p.m. PK, good morning. What's going on?
How we doing, guys?
We are great. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. So, Paul, there's a lot to choose from, particularly in the second half of the game on Sunday against the Giants. But out of what you saw on Sunday, what concerns you the most about the Titans as they move forward here?
Well, there's a lot to sort through there, but, you know, the lack of explosive plays from the offense is especially when you're giving up explosive plays from the other team's offenses, is the thing that I anticipated coming in, and it bit them. And it's a disappointment. I think there were some opportunities there that they didn't find, and they continue to hand the ball off to Derrick Henry on first down all the time, which makes them utterly predictable. Which I think, you know, kind of leads to that problem. You know, if you threw the ball down the field or just threw the ball on first down a little bit, I think you mix it up and maybe set yourself up for some better results.
Okay, so that goes to Todd Downing, which is a very popular topic. I'm, you know, kind of resistant to, I think people jump to the OC quickly in a lot of situations, and I think sometimes it's overreaction. But I didn't think he had a very good day, PK. And, you know, I thought last year a lot of things you could point to. It's hard for me to exactly divvy up the blame exactly, but they did take a step back from Arthur Smith to Todd Downing. Where do you think they are with Todd Downing? What do you think of his performance so far, a season and a game?
They ran the ball a lot on first down under Arthur Smith as well. And they ran the ball a lot on first down under Matt LaFleur as well. Mike Herndon wrote at my site that just published, and I tend to agree with him. I think it's maybe more Mike Vrabel than it is Todd Downing. I think clearly he's approving it, and it's happened for a long, long time here. You know, Todd Downing's not doing anything that Mike Vrabel doesn't want, and they run the ball very frequently on first down, the most in the league with regularity. So I think for everybody to presume that that's Todd Downing and he's somehow doing something that Mike Vrabel doesn't approve of is kind of silly. So I think we probably should be looking a step higher than Todd Downing. And Mike Vrabel seems to be all right with the idea of, you know, you hear Peyton Manning talk. I think he talked in Manning Cast on Monday night about, you know, trying to skip third down altogether. You know, go first down, second down, first down. The Titans seem to be aiming to get to third down and short as a goal, and they came up short of that goal. But I'm not absolving Todd Downing. It's bad strategy by Todd Downing, but it's one that his boss seems to be perfectly fine with.
Well, that's one aspect, and that's a great point. Mike does a great job, and that's a really good point and interesting on the first down thing. But there's more to it, right? I mean, they did take a big step back last year. I think we all agree Arthur Smith was really good. That's why he got a head coaching job. But beyond just the first down running thing, you know, the Chig play, I didn't like it. I just didn't. But, you know, you could always draw up a play and say, see, this is supposed to happen, and it works. Just beyond that aspect of it, like, do you think that he should be under scrutiny? And also, do you think just because – the Titans were interested in Tim Kelly, and he's here, that this is markedly different than, say, starting out last year with Shane Bowen and Jim Schwartz is now on the staff?
Well, I didn't see any hints of Tim Kelly in what they did, really. I mean, there were tight ends on the field a lot. They weren't doing much in the passing game. I don't understand on the 2 3rd and 1s why you don't hand the ball to Derrick Henry. Just regular hand it to Derrick Henry. I mean, he doesn't play third down a lot, generally speaking. I'm not surprised he doesn't get the ball on 3rd and 4 and 3rd and 5. People seem to be stunned by that. I don't know why. But on 3rd and 1, that's when he does play on third down generally. And I don't know why you have to be cute on the 2 3rd and 1s. I mean, yeah, they've had success in Wildcat before, but they've had more success turning around and handing the ball to him on, you know, 2nd and 1, 3rd and 1, 4th and 1. I don't understand drawing up a jig play that could work as opposed to a Derrick Henry play that has worked a lot. So those don't make sense to me. But this idea that something's going to happen to Todd Downing is silly. Vrabel's not made any changes to his staff in season during his time here. They lost the opener last year. We all thought they'd go to Seattle and get crushed, and they won. I'm not saying they're going to do that in Buffalo. I think this is not as good of a team, and the Buffalo team is better than the team they've beaten the last 2 years and better than the Seattle team they beat last year. But, you know, stability is their thing.
Paul Kaharsky on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. So, PK, how surprised were you by what we saw defensively in the second half, and do you have cause for concern for the run defense as they move forward here? A run defense that was very strong a year ago.
I think there's cause for concern with the run defense with the linebackers. I mean, David Long looked little. Zach Cunningham was not present a lot of the times, or was running around the blocks and not showing up. Saquon Barkley was past him by the time he got where he needed to be. Cunningham, to me, a bigger concern. I don't understand a package in the red zone that's designed to have Long and Cunningham and Dylan Cole there. You know, they've gotten so good with plugging guys in and having success that now, I'm not saying they've got great alternatives, but I don't know why you're looking for a reason to get Dylan Cole on the field for 5 snaps in the red zone at a crucial time in the game. He's not helping you. So I think there'll be a better run defense than that, but I think our presumption that they'd automatically be a good run defense is maybe bad by us. The DBs weren't doing a great job helping out. So they, have to reassess all of that stuff. Jeffrey Simmons can only do so much. And Harold Landry, we tend not to give as much of a nod to as a run defender because we look at the sack numbers. But he's a very solid run defender, and they missed him in that department for sure.
By the way, I thought you told me Saquon Barkley was a broken down, a waste of a pick. Is that not right? Is that not what you said, PK?
I did go on to draft him in another league, but I do.
God, such a hypocrite!
I do think we both need to give him time, and he will ultimately live up to my expectations.
We'll see. All right, Titans offense, Treylon Burks. I mean, look, Kyle Phillips, I think Kyle Phillips is going to be there. He's going to be a good slot guy for them, but they got to scare people down. They got to do things downfield. I don't expect Treylon Burks to be A.J. Brown this year, but I did like a couple glimpses of him Sunday. What do you think the likelihood is that, you know, that he can be like A.J. Brown and get himself after a few games, you know, into that 60-70% snap rate where he's a bigger part of the offense?
I think that they think that he's limited in what he can do. And I don't think that they're a team that's going to say, well, he can do, I hate that I'm about to say this, he can do these four things, and so we're going to maximize these four things. I wish they did that, but I think that they are more intent on guys on the field who can do everything. And so, you know, I think that they feel like they got the most out of him that they could in that game. Now, you draft a guy knowing those limitations. You've had 4 months with him. They tend to draft long-term rather than short-term, which is the way it works, but it's not the way it works when you trade away your best pass catcher and you're looking for somebody that's going to help fill the hole of trading away your best pass catcher. And they're just not dynamic in the passing game. They didn't throw it to Robert Woods either, who wasn't getting the kind of separation that he was. They didn't throw it to Austin Hooper either, who you know, was all over the place in camp. So I don't really get the targeting in the pass game. Outside of Dontrell Hilliard, who, you know, deserved every target he got and maximized them and looked terrific, I thought. So I think gradually more Burks, not automatically more Burks next week. I also don't understand, Joe, I mean, the answer we got Monday about, you know, look, it's a yes-no early in the progression and you move on and, you know, if he's third and all of that. I just don't understand why they can't run more plays where he's the early yes-no.
Well, you just hit on the biggest thing that I'm questioning what I've been looking at from the spring all through camp. I really thought Austin Hooper, and again, in one game, so this could be something to laugh at a month from now, but I thought from the jump he would be heavily involved. And it looked like on some plays he's just on the other side of the field looking around like, okay, I guess I'll just go back to the sideline. Did you share my thought on him going in, or was I too bullish on him?
No, I shared your thought. I thought he would be heavily featured and a constant presence. But I also consistently make the mistake thinking that they're going to have a primary guy or a safety valve or any of that. And look, it's worked for them that they don't have that they kind of go game by game and take it as it comes and all of that. But it feels like at certain times they should go on to the field for a series and say, all right, we're gonna let Austin Hooper carry this drive. They don't do that often enough in my eyes when they're in trouble.
Paul Kaharsky from paulkaharsky.com, Outkick 360, our guest here on Robbie and Retro. PK, great stuff as always. Thanks for taking time to join us this morning.
Great to be with you guys. Thanks a lot.
Absolutely. Paul Kaharsky, our guest, joins us every Wednesday morning at 8 o'clock here on Robbie and Retro. We'll take your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. More of the Titans looking ahead to the Bills coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game, streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by the Law Offices of Amanda Gentry. We are live from the Hillside Medical Game Studio on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. I got a pair of tickets to give away to see Crowded House at the Ryman Auditorium coming up on Sunday, September 18th. That is this Sunday. 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Caller number 3 will win a pair of tickets to see Crowded House at the Ryman Auditorium coming up on Sunday, 615-737-1025. Joe Rexrode currently mesmerized the television in studio because A.J. Brown is on Good Morning Football back there.
He is. Talking about that Eagles offense. Looked pretty good. Then again,
does it
they
count?
Played the Lions.
I was going to say, how much credit do we
look,
give
him? It's a Jim Wyatt tweet from 2019. What's up with that? It's a Jim Wyatt tweet. Oh, because he's wearing the Jalen Hurts Sooners jersey. I get it. Okay. Why was Jim Wyatt there when he was doing that? Jim Wyatt's everywhere.
He is all over the place. No question about it.
He is.
LD from McMinnville on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Going back to the Hooper discussion. Doesn't Tannehill have the ability to target Hooper when he wants to, or does he not have that freedom within the Titans' offense? This from LD from McMinnville.
Oh, of course. Yeah, I mean, that shouldn't have been taken as a discussion just on, you know, on like Downing or something. I mean, yeah, there were plays out there the other day where he could have thrown a Hooper. Now, to PK's point, that you know there is a first read on plays, right? And so, you know, like how many times was he the first read? I don't know, but I just know he got targeted one time. So it's a combination of everything that goes into someone not producing, including maybe them not getting open.
Well, it's always interesting in the passing game too, and I heard somebody talking about this, you know, a couple weeks ago, and I can't remember exactly who it was. I wish I could, so I'd give them proper credit. But it's like when you're watching, you know, the game, and you know they throw up the instant replay, and you look at say, oh my goodness, Robert Woods is wide open, or Austin Hooper was wide open.
Yeah.
And yes, are there times where the quarterback just misses that? Sure. I mean, it definitely happens. But it's also like it works in tandem with the progressions. Like you're going through your first one, and then you don't have a little. If it's not there, you got to move to your second one. And if you, by the time you've moved to your third one, and all of a sudden your first one's open again, well, that doesn't do you a whole lot of good. At that point, you've moved on, and there's a pass rusher in your face. So it's not just about, you know, the entire route of getting open. You got to be open when the quarterback's looking your way most times.
Oh, yeah. It's a very – the clock is ticking. That was actually Vrabel was talking about that.
Maybe it was Vrabel.
I'm stealing stuff from Vrabel. Coach Robbie.
That's what we do.
Look at you. Got to coach better, got to play better.
We're trying to coach better.
Liam on Downing, or which he calls drowning. Drownings, I assume that's not a mistake. Said, Joe, this is one of the rare cases. I wish you had a little more Jared in you. You really haven't seen enough of Drownings play calling? First of all, we're going to talk about Jared. If I'm not mistaken, I think Jared's – more of a Downing, pro Downing guy, isn't he? Maybe that's changed this week. But, yeah, look, I definitely agree with PK on, like the idea that there would be a midseason firing from Mike Vrabel of a staff member. To me, like, if that happens because, like, someone, like, you know, like breaks into the snack machine or something, or you know, like does something that causes them to be fired for cause.
Yeah,
you know, like breaks a projector in a meeting. I would be very surprised if that happens during Mike Vrabel's
suggest that
career
they throw
as a
the
head
ball
coach.
On first down.
What's that?
No, never mind. That's it. Suggest that they throw the ball on first down.
No, we're running the ball. But look, that's a good point too. I mean, and you know what? That's a good idea for a column by Mike Hernan. We'll have to have him on soon. You know, to talk about the fact that look, there is some consistency in some of the offensive things from Vrabel's entire tenure. He's had three different OCs. But yeah, the difference, of course, is like look at how good the offense was overall with Arthur Smith. Even if they were predictable on first down, they lit people up and scored 31 points a game 2 years ago.
Yeah.
They also had A.J. Brown.
Well, Liam just said you could just let Tim Kelly call plays. I mean, look, maybe it gets to that point at some point. But
yeah, I mean, I guess it is possible that with the firing, forget about it. Is it possible that they could at some point, if things go really bad, that he could flip play calling and send it? I guess that's possible. I suppose. I still even would be surprised by that unless it got to, like, the point this season where it's just dreadful and it's almost time to, like, punt. Okay, Malik Willis, you can have a few games. And Tim Kelly, you call the plays.
Well, we've talked about it. You know, whether it's, you know, how much blame do you want to divvy up between Todd Downing and Vrabel and Tannehill and whoever else you want to throw into it on the offense? To me, I mean, I'm not going to say it doesn't matter because it does, but regardless of who the blame is on, like, it's got to get better. Like, we're one game into the season. So, if you think that heading into week three, if they lose to Buffalo, that they're just going to turn around and fire Todd Downing, it's not going to happen. So, like, I think we probably just need to all get over that. Like, it's not going to happen as they move forward here. So, you're early in the season. How does it get better from here? You know, Derrick Henry, obviously, is going to be a massive part of the offense, and he should be a massive part of the offense. How do you help him be better. I think some of that is being a little bit more unpredictable on first down. Now, is that something that they can do moving forward? We'll see. I hope so. Like I think
they can.
I think 80%. Yeah, like I think 80% running the ball on first and 15 and below is not acceptable. Like that's too much. And I think, you know, I think you help out your running back in the long term, both with the hits that he takes, but also just the unpredictability if you start throwing the ball a little bit more earlier in the downs. And then the question at that point goes back to what you've talked about this whole week, Joe, and that is, well, can you do that with any sort of consistency and regularity with a group of pass catchers that you have out there? Like the whole operation offensively has got to get better. It's the first game of the season, so I didn't expect them to be at their best right out of the gate. But it's certainly – I mean, it's going to have to get a lot better as they move forward.
Yeah, and if you want to go back, it is interesting. One thing I forgot about last year, and it's certainly – the Bills are, well, I believe, the best team in the NFL. But if you want to go back to last year, Russ and the Seahawks went into Indy in week one, tore them up, hitting deep shots, looked good, right? I mean, Seattle was supposed to be good last year. And obviously he got hurt and it all fell apart. And in a lot of ways, but going into that game, it's like, one, defensively, you know, what is this team? And then they also, by the way, they had a bad day, really, against Seattle. But the Titans had been so bad offensively in the opener, you were wondering what – you knew that they had too many good players to continue to be that bad, but they did turn it around from week one to week two.
By the way, they lost Taylor Lewan in warm-ups of that game, too.
They did. They lost. So Lewan is out in warm-ups, so that – Who was that? Who came in at – I guess it was Sombrilo, right? So yeah. Ty Sombrilo was still on the team. So you got Sombrilo, you got Questenberry. You have an offensive line that had just been crushed by the Cardinals, and they responded with a big game. I mean, a lot of people had big games. Well, that was Julio Jones' game of the year.
It was.
And we were like, ah, there it is. Get used to that, folks. That's going to happen a whole bunch this year. It's just –
It might happen a whole bunch this year.
It might. But every one of these games is its own flawed, beautiful masterpiece.
It is. Will from Nashville on the text line says, guys, do you try to scheme up maybe like one or two plays with Malik Willis out there against this or against the Bills this week? I don't know. I mean, sure.
I'm not against it. He's active on game day. He could potentially get – I don't hate – like
Red zone?
Yeah, I don't hate it. I mean, I'm open to them being more creative other than handing it to Chigakonkwo, which we're going
to
talk
about. Which we're going to get to coming up next, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. TD with some interesting points on the Chigakonkwo tight end reverse end-around play, whatever you want to call it. We'll get to that coming up next and get Joe's response to that as well. But right now, Joe, you've got a message from OrderGreen.com.
I do have a message from OrderGreen.com. Thank you for mentioning that. OrderGreen.com is the nation's number one online shop for all things cannabis. A lot of benefits to this for me personally. Stress, anxiety, inflammation. Get rid of some inflammation. Get some relaxation. Maybe a little bit of elation. Shop online for a wide selection of high-quality THC and CBD products. Edibles, gummies, vapes, flower. They got everything. Their team's very knowledgeable. They know about their products. You know you're getting the highest of quality. This is nationwide same-day delivery right to your doorstep. You save 25% off every shipment of gummies if you have a subscription. Also, if you use promo code JOE20, get 20% off your first purchase. OrderGreen.com.
Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Wednesday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, we've talked a lot this week about Todd Downing and the play calls, especially on some of the shorter downs. You heard Paul Kaharsky earlier in the show Say what I kind of said on Monday. Third and one, why don't you just turn around and hand the ball off Derrick Henry both times? Making things a little bit too complicated. I think you have way more of an issue with the Okonkwo play call than the Derrick Henry lining up in the Wildcat call that took place on Sunday as well. And the Okonkwo play has generated a ton of conversation over the course of the past couple of days, including with our very own Teron Davenport as well, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter and host of Talking with TD. And he put together one of his iconic Whiteboard Wednesdays yesterday, which if you've not seen it before, go check it out. Every Wednesday, TD puts that on social media. Whiteboard Wednesday yesterday, the focus was that play, that kind of a reverse end around to Chigakonkwo, and it was interesting to see his thoughts on it. TD seems to be a little less upset about the play call than you and most other people do. I think that would be fair to say.
Well, first of all, so let's go backstory on this. I have not heard yet D-Mace, but this started with D-Mace, and I totally forgot about that until just now. He said something on the the midday show. He said yesterday that he liked the play.
Correct.
That it was just about execution. And then TD tweeted a tweet, which was like, D-Mace speaking truth on this play, which I was surprised because, TD actually, I think, believe is the one who asked Vrabel about the play, basically like, do you wish you would have handed it to Derrick Henry? So then I texted TD his tweet, and I'm like, you got to help me out. Even if Juan makes his block, it looks to me like on the All-22, like, again, for people who don't know, the All-22 is like the coach's tape and Pro Football Writers, you can get that from all these games.
Kind of like an end zone view of it.
Yeah, end zone view, so you can see all 22 players. It looks to me like they're way outnumbered on that side. So then TD's like, calls me, and we talk through it. He's like, this is easier to talk than text. He made some good points, and he did a Whiteboard Wednesday, which I just retweeted, which is interesting about it. I still watch the play. See, I think and what happens on this play is, the Giants didn't react like the Titans. They thought more the linebackers would flow more with the – obviously the Titans are trying to make it look totally like it's all going right. They're in 13. That's three tight ends and one back. And everybody is lined up like they're going right. And so everybody, like TD says on the thing, they're blocking that way. So they're trying to get them flowing, but they don't flow. It does – I mean, look, Lawan missing his block blows up the play. There's no doubt. I do, but the thing I didn't realize until watching again is Westbrook Akine also doesn't block the right guy. And if you see the reaction after the play, someone is yelling at him from the sideline, and he's like, what? But he was supposed to take 49, doesn't. So I'm watching the play right now. If you're not watching, I'm trying to paint a picture for you and maybe not doing a very good job. I still, though, see, he's just totally outnumbered on that play. I don't know why, because it looks like Lawan kind of didn't. I mean, he's supposed to block down, but like he was a little bit confused on what he was supposed to do. So one thing that I would say from that is there's a really interesting breakdown, and you can see where execution could have made it work. How the one missed block by Lawan totally changes the route for Okonkwo. I'd also say, there's a reason why you don't run that play. For one, again, you've never seen this actual defense on film. You know the DC. You know a lot of the personnel. It's game one. It's a new DC. And if you are that bad at executing the play, I don't know. Did you not practice it enough or whatever it is? If it's this easy for it to be blown up, that to me is why, even though it's an interesting breakdown, and I think great points by TD, it just to me reinforces why you don't do it.
Well, let me make something clear just from my perspective. And we got a texter that just texted on the text line, says we ran that play with Arthur Smith a lot. I don't have any problem with the play. I have a problem with the play on third and one. Turn around and hand the ball off to Derrick Henry.
Well, in the most critical part of the game, like you are in a position to kill the clock, keep the ball, be in victory formation. I mean, to me, if there's ever a time to force feed your best player and just be simple, that would be it. And I know it's very easy when something goes as badly as that play did to jump all over it. But again, with any of these situations, go before you see the play and tell me what they're about to run. And I'm going to say, no, don't do that. Maybe he gets 15 yards and yay, and no one will ever talk about it again. But before the play ever is run, no.
Dave in Big Rock says, I hear what you guys are saying, but who are we as a football team if we can't line up and use Derrick Henry to get a yard from you, regardless of if they see it coming? I mean, that's kind of my point. Like,
right. So we're agreeing with you.
Yeah, like you ought to be able to turn around, hand the ball, hit to Derrick Henry on third and one, and feel pretty confident that you're gonna get a yard and you're gonna pick up first down.
I think the interesting thing about stuff like this, I love what TD does with Whiteboard Wednesday, and people who, you know, there are a lot of people out there who break down film, and sometimes, you know, I mean, there's missing information. Well, not sometimes, always. There's missing information compared to what the coaches have, but it's a good reminder. You know, that these things are not just willy-nilly thrown into a playbook or a game plan. Like, they are studied, they are practiced, they are assessed. There was some breakdown. The execution breakdown here is, I mean, that's not good. Like you should be prepared to execute that play a lot better if you're going to run it in that situation.
Well, if you've got that many different guys that are failing to execute on that play, just seemingly from, like, I guess, either being confused at what they were looking at or not knowing exactly what they were supposed to do. Like, the question you brought up earlier is a valid one to me. Like, did you practice it enough? Or what we talked about yesterday, did the look that you wanted to run this against, like, did you get that right look against this? Because to me, those two things don't add up. Like, if this is a part of your game plan and you've been planning on running this thing and, you know, it's third and short, this is a play that you want to go try to run. Well, then why are so many different guys not on the same page with what ended up happening on the play? It makes no sense to me.
Yeah, and it reminds me a little bit of, if you remember the Brett Kern fake field goal.
Oh, we remember.
And there was, I mean, that whole next week was, there was a whole bunch of, you know, questions about, because basically they expected Devin White to do something totally different than he did. And he's like, no, I think I'm going to go ahead and try to kill your punter, actually.
Brett Kern paid a heavy price for that mistake.
And the ref missed the fumble, by the way, that probably would have lost the Titans the game. But there's an example of, you know, there's a lot of film study that goes into it. And so you're like, okay, so he's gonna flow that way because of what we should. And no, he just stayed home and crushed your punter.
Well, it goes back to last year.
You can't predict those things 100%, obviously.
Well, it goes back to last year in the Arizona game. Like, remember the play? It was like the play action boot with Tannehill. And they were expecting Chandler Jones to crash down. And then all of a sudden, Tannehill turns around and Chandler Jones is eyeball to eyeball with him and he fumbles the ball.
Like, he turns around and Chandler Jones is in his ribs.
Yeah. I mean, that's not what they're trying to do on that play, but sometimes.
And these things happen, but that is also, I mean, that is also part of offensive coordination, by the way.
For sure.
So, it's good stuff. I mean, it's an interesting thing, but I'm going to. You know, Dennis on the text line says, keep it simple. Don't get cute. This isn't a team that's going to win with finesse, which I kind of agree with, although I will say, like, we've been talking today a lot about, like, throwing on first down, too. I mean, you have to have balance. Like, you have to have a combination of being physical and wearing people down. All that stuff is great, but you also have to, like, outsmart them sometimes.
Well, and it's timing, too. That's my biggest issue with the whole thing is timing. Where you are in the game. And the down and distance. It's third and one. Like, sometimes just the simple play is the right play to me. Now, again, you know, are we even having this conversation if a Conquo breaks off a 17-yard run? No, we're not. But, you know, it just.
I would hope it would at least come up like, man, that's a risky play. I don't know if I like that. But, yeah, maybe not. But that's the thing. You forget. I mean, honestly, you forget about a lot of the plays at work.
Exactly.
You forget about a lot of plays in a football game. It's like I was covering the Tennessee-Pittsburgh game, and that's in those college games sometimes, like, God, there's so many huge plays in this game that will never be talked about ever again.
Yeah.
Paul says, is it not the OC's job to access which play has the highest likelihood of success, which has the highest likelihood of failure, make decisions on the play to select that way, especially knowing the strengths and weaknesses of your roster? Yeah, look, these obviously are calls that are quickly, you got to get them in, like, boom, 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 let's go, what's call? Now, this was obviously a play, as Vrabel said after the game. It was one of their short yardage plays, and someone pointed out the text line correctly. They have run that little tight end handoff under Arthur Smith before it. Yeah. I mean, teams run that play.
It's again, like I don't dislike the play.
Right. It's just, to your point, Paul, to me, in that situation, it's like, what's just absolutely what is the foundation of this team? Like, you know, what is the identity of this team? And if you can't count on that to get you a yard, really, what are you? And also, by the way, if you're not going to do that, I'm with everybody who likes the QB sneak there, and I like QB sneaks a lot in general.
Yeah, and I like Ryan Tannehill's chances of getting it too. So, I don't know. You live and you learn. We'll see if they adjust from that. Moving ahead into the Buffalo game. Join Big Joe Dubin and Elijah Campbell this Friday for the Apple Collision Center's Game Blitz presented by National Playmakers Academy. From 6 to midnight, they'll preview the big games and then take you through the night of high school football around the mid-state. It's the Apple Collision Center's Game Blitz presented by National Playmakers Academy on 102.5-106.3 The Game. Coming up next, it is time for The Choice Is Yours. Michelle Knezovic in the questions chair. Looking forward to that. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5-106.3 The Game. And it is that time of the day, time for The Choice Is Yours here on Robbie and Rex Road. As always, we encourage your participation on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Michelle Knezovic in the questions chair today. Michelle, I turn things over to you.
Ooh, I had my first mute of the day. What do we want to start with, guys? Sports or non-sports?
Sports.
Okay, we're going to start with sports, and this is all kind of an NFL, SEC, tailgating, basically football is back edition of The Choice Is Yours. Okay, first, starting with sports, if you can pick one SEC coach, say you're an AD of some other SEC school, but if you can pick any SEC coach to be your football coach for the next 10 years, who are you picking?
Next 10 years?
Yeah, so we need – so they are their age right now – how they are as a coach, and you need them to be your coach for the next 10 years.
I get to where you're going with this. That's an interesting one.
I'm going Kirby Smart.
Okay.
Honestly, I still thought about Saban. I know he's 70 years old. But.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's got to be the – yeah, I will say this. I mean, look, I look at Mark Stoops, and I'm very impressed. Now, the hard part with Mark Stoops – and I don't want to diminish what he's done at all, but let's look at Dan Mullen in Mississippi State.
Great. Right?
I mean, sometimes it just doesn't translate. Some coaches are just better suited for a place like Kentucky or Mississippi State than they are for places like Alabama and Georgia. I don't know that that's the case. I'm just saying that would give me pause on him. Is there anyone else right now in the
Lane
roster
train.
Who would – yeah. I mean, he's fine. I don't think that there's anybody else who really – I mean, Brian – some people would probably argue for Brian Kelly, I guess. He's a good
we'll
coach.
We'll see.
Yeah, he's a good coach. Yeah. You know what? Honestly, look, man, all I know is that Nick Saban almost 30 years ago was head coach of Michigan State, and he looked 10 years older than he does right now. Give me Saban.
Okay.
He's a vampire.
I mean, I thought about if I had total confidence in Saban, like still coaching in 10 years, it's an easy answer.
Well, but didn't you just say you have him for the next 10 years?
Well, but she said those like they're his age now.
Yeah.
Well, like if I'm guaranteed he's around till 80 coaching, then yeah, I'll go Saban, but I'm going Kirby Smart.
He's going to pull a Jim Boeheim and coach into his 80s or 79 or however old he is.
If you're telling me that he's my coach for the next 10 years, then yes, I will take him.
All right.
And so, you?
I know that you all might think that I'm going to pick Mark Stoops.
So you got Stoops here. I'm walking out of the studio.
And I think if we're talking build the program, I think what he's done at Kentucky, but I don't think we've seen, you know, we've seen some consistency, but not as big of a sample size as some of these other coaches. I'm going to jump on Robbie's back and pick Kirby Smart as well. I mean, he beat Saban in the national championship, so.
Can we make one amendment to him, though? Can he get rid of that stupid visor?
Yes. No, it's part of his character.
Like, put a hat on.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's something about the way his hair, like, flows over the visor that drives me nuts.
Me too.
I can't stand it.
Hate the visor. Hate it.
Only one person should be allowed to wear a visor in the history of SEC coaching, and that is Steve Spurrier. Nobody else.
That's
leave
true.
It alone.
Yeah, you're right. The visor with him was cool. It's just not cool with Kirby.
It's just not cool anymore.
Yeah, I thought you were going to go with Jim Wyatt, and then you said coaching.
Well, yeah, coaching. Jim Wyatt can wear whatever he wants.
Okay, guys, switching to non-sports. Pretend you're not covering an NFL game, right, or working or anything. What is your perfect Sunday setup for an NFL Sunday?
Perfect Sunday setup. Well, so I need two TVs. So I need to have, you know, I was presented with a problem on Sunday that I found a way to solve. But like, I need to be able to watch on a traditional Sunday that the Titans and Packers are playing at the same time. Like, I need to be able to watch both. So I need two TVs. And if it's just the Titans playing, I'll watch the Titans game and I'll have the other one on, like, Red Zone or something. But two TVs is a must. Honestly, I think I'm for NFL, without having – for me having to do too much work, if it's just me, order me a nice pizza. Give me either, like, a beer or a Diet Coke, and I'm cool. What a combo that is, by the way.
A beer and a Diet Coke together?
Yeah, maybe together.
Yeah. I love that for you.
Thank you.
I'm definitely – to me, it's the right sports bar, because I just – I mean, if you can have a situation where you can actually have the view of – or even like a sports book, which I've – you know, like, yeah. I've been in Vegas – the Caesar Sportsbook for an NFL Sunday. That was pretty sweet. You know, you got them all right. I mean, if you can have, like, we have Red Zone, and it's cool to flip around or have it on Red Zone, but if you can actually have all the games in front of you playing, and also someone bringing you food and beer, that's pretty much it. So I'm not going to give any free ads. I got some places in mind, but it's the sports bar of choice for sure.
Okay, I am crafting my perfect Sunday right now, considering I'm moving. And, you know, we've got a lot of friends who love sports, so we're all bringing our TVs to my new apartment in a couple weeks once I move in. So perfect setup in the biggest sweatshirt, biggest sweatpants possible. Everybody BYOB, bring your own food, bring your own beer and TV in addition, and laptop, so you can have as many screens as possible with friends. And
you're just need a surge protector in there, too.
Bring your own extra Wi-Fi adapter. But yeah,
fire extinguisher.
Just on the couch. Everybody bring your own TVs, food, sweats, all day. Just all day long.
Is Junior allowed to come and like scream about the Steelers all day?
He scares me sometimes with that. But yes, he is invited because he has a TV and he does have the NFL package. So he is invited.
Bring your freaking TV, Junior.
I will say, very quickly before we move on to the next question, the one problem that I have with the sports bar setup is – every now and then, like, you get people in there changing channels that have no clue what they're doing. That happened to me the other day. It's like third and five in the Packers game. All of a sudden the channel changes. I'm like, hey, we can't have this.
Oh, no, you can't. Oh,
can't be doing this.
If you're about to do something, you got to ask. You got to give it out to the crowd. Okay. And, don't do it right in the middle.
We can't be doing that.
At least, like, commercial, then you allow someone to. No, that is a good point.
Or you get really obnoxious fans and you just can't watch your own game.
Okay. There's that too.
But moving on, we are back to sports. Which SEC quarterback are you drafting? Just after the couple weeks we've seen, which SEC quarterback are you drafting first overall? This is hypothetical, obviously.
Which SEC quarterback currently playing in the SEC?
Currently playing in the SEC. Who are you choosing first overall if you have the number one pick in the draft?
Bryce Young.
Yeah.
I mean, overall, he wasn't great against Texas, but like the body of work of what he is and the escapability. I mean, that play he made on that final drive for Alabama, it was like a Heisman-level play. Now, everybody's going to probably forget about it because it was week two and it was Texas and he didn't really have a great game other than that, but it was a Heisman-level play from Bryce Young. So I'll go Bryce Young. Although I will say, even though he's not going to get drafted very high, I don't think, in the NFL, Stetson Bennett's been pretty darn good so far.
Yeah. I mean, Stetson Bennett's a terrific college player. I don't know what he's going to be in the NFL. I don't know what Will Levis or Anthony Richardson are going to be in the NFL either. I think those would be the two, like those three guys might have gone in the first round, right? But based on what Bryce Young has done, I mean, the only knock on Bryce Young, honestly, is that he's not very tall. Other than that, to me, he's the clear answer here.
Are we willing to go Anthony Richardson's like first round guy yet?
Well, some people think he is.
Okay.
I don't know for sure that he will be. You know, I think it's kind of like he plays more like he did against Utah. I like his chances. He plays more like he did against Kentucky.
Not so much.
But definitely like the mock draft community, there's a lot of momentum for that. Look, he could be great. Levis could be great. Bryce Young is special. And I think Bryce Young is going to be special in the NFL. So it's pretty easy for me.
Okay, well, looks like it's going to go all Bryce Young for this one. But I think
thought for sure she'd go Levis.
Listen.
Come on, do mayonnaise, boy.
I think he could pass him, though, this season. So give it a couple more weeks. Need to see a little bit more, but I think my answer
You think Levis could pass Bryce Young?
Yes.
Yeah, you better.
In this conversation, yes.
You got some ayahuasca in that mayo.
I would. That is not a hot take.
In my opinion, like if I like, I'm just saying. I mean, it could potentially happen, but in my opinion, that would be insane, and I'm going to shame the GM who does that until I'm proven wrong.
Okay,
Rex.
And then we'll forget I ever said it.
I mean, I said he potentially could.
Yeah, that's crazy to me.
Okay, Rex.
But I'm a Bryce Young believer, so you know, we'll see.
Okay, finally, guys, top three tailgate dishes. You're going to a party, and everybody listening, you're welcome for giving you ideas right now. Which three dishes are you bringing?
Three.
Or two, because lack of time.
Well, you go first. Do your three.
Buffalo chicken dip, ultimate, and then it's like this corn taco dip. So essentially all taco toppings in a dip form, and obviously Tostitos chips.
Okay.
So that one, my Aunt Mary does cowboy caviar.
Yes, that's what it's called.
Yes. That's an incredible dip with guac and black beans and everything. That's a great. In fact, buffalo chicken dip's a great one too. But to me, like, you got to have elite brats. And I'm talking like there's like an Amish store near us where you can get like the jalapeno and cheese brats. So to me, it's got to be like incredible brats selection, and then I'm happy to tailgate.
I'll go a different way because I'll just fast forward to a different time of year when it's a little bit cooler as the fall is approaching. Give me some white chicken chili, bringing some of that to the program, and then just nachos. Just build your own nachos. Have you ever seen people, like, whether it's tailgate party or anywhere else, that have like a, it's just like a thing of, it's just a table and you dump all the stuff on the table.
Yes.
And you can just build it your way and pour it on there.
Yeah.
That's what I'm doing.
That's pretty strong.
White chicken chili and nachos.
White chicken chili is
fire. Yes. Also, pigs in a blanket.
It's good.
Oh, there you go. Always a winner.
This has been The Choice Is Yours. You can catch it every Wednesday at 8:45 here on the program. 615-737-1025. We'll get back into the Titans coming up next, including one player that Joe Rexroad believes is receiving way too much of a pass this week as it relates to the Titans. That's next. This is Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.